VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, battles are being waged in classrooms across the country, much of it centering around curriculum, some around practices and policies, some over matters of political correctness, and sadly, oftentimes, the students are caught in the crosshairs, being used like pawns on a chessboard, and they often are the ones victimized by the system. Well, there's a growing chorus of parents that are rising up who are pushing for the ability to make educational choices that are best for their child. We'll be delving into that matter today. Joining us is Reverend Michael Benjamin, who has served as the National Director of Grassroots Advocacy and Mobilization for the American Federation for Children and led a team that oversaw the grassroots advocacy and mobilization efforts, which maintained and cultivated an extensive advocacy base on behalf of our nation's children that are most in need of equitable educational opportunity and access. He now serves as their senior advisor for their faith-based leadership engagement, grassroots advocacy, and mobilization efforts. Michael has also worked in the educational choice field since 2000 and has established a national reputation for his efforts to engage, to recruit, organize, train, and mobilize supporters of educational choice. In 2001, he had co-founded Step Up for Students that oversees the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship for low-income students and also helped convince the legislature to create a program, now serving over 10,000 low-income students, over 1,800 schools throughout the state of Florida. For several years, he's also served on the national board of the Black Alliance of Educational Options. Michael, good to have you in the studio today.
Thank you, John.
I understand you're in town for a convention, and if you'd first share with our listeners what's taking place, what is this convention?
Well, American Federation for Children annually has a summit, and what better place to be than the birthplace of educational choice and Polly Williams, and we're also celebrating Dr. Howard Fuller. But the American Federation for Children is the kind of one-stop shop place for educational choice across the country. We're celebrating educational choice and the expansion that we've had this year. Also, you know, the 56 states that have, the 56 programs that we have across the country, 500,000 students across the country that are in educational choice, and how to deal with giving children access to quality education and dealing with the current barriers and how to tackle that.
Well, maybe I've missed it, but I've not seen word of your convention you're gathering in our Milwaukee newspaper. Is that uncommon?
It is not uncommon.
What drew your concern personally to this matter of education?
Well, you know, I really want to get to the heart of this. I've been called into this by the Lord for some 21 years. And, you know, sometimes the vernacular gets co-opted. The mandate is to educate the public. It is not to sustain a system over children. And and please bear in mind that my child is in a public school. I've had him in a Christian school, but he's 147 IQ, and they opened up a gifted magnet school. And son, you're going to try it out and see how this goes. But the bottom line is, if the mandate is to educate the public, there are many avenues in which to get there. We didn't all drive to the studio or come to work in the same vehicle. We don't eat at the same places. And all we're saying is, look, let's put educational choice options on the educational menu and let parents decide what's best for their children. And I think that the pandemic has exacerbated these issues where now parents have to be forced to, in some situations, educate their own children. And they're starting to find out what the children know and don't know.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe the state of education today across our nation?
We're in trouble. We're in trouble. We got a serious problem. There are those that are graduating children that are not educated. They are not functioning at a level in which they'll be able to meet their hopes and dreams. We know that even especially with black males in the education system that, you know, 59% are graduating. But yet mm-hmm. there's an interesting scenario that
has 41% behind.
Unbelievable. And what happens is also on the flip side, if you're not reading on grade level by the third grade, we know that they're already building a prison cell for you. And with the privatization of prison cells, they're going to want customers in order to build their revenue. And if you look at the demographics of who's there, you can start to see that maybe this is not a uncoordinated, haphazard situation. And I really believe as the body of Christ that we need to be the ones in the vanguard of this issue. If we believe that we have the same Holy Spirit that raised Jesus from the grave, then if we can come in one accord, which is a key, we can be believers in a room and not be of one accord. But if we are, and we're really about one purpose, which is helping our children, and we can put aside offense, so we're not looking at one believer and saying this, that, or the other, we're all equal in God's eyes that he performed his redemptive work. Let's come in a room. We're brilliant people. We have the Holy Spirit. Let's figure out how to help our kids and not lean on the government to do it.
Wow. When it comes to education, it seems parents today are becoming more spectators, or that's how the educational system views them, as being spectators rather than active participants. I know it's not always been this way. How did we ever get to this point?
I think the part of the situation is that we depend on others to resolve our own issues. We don't deal with the local like we used to. We don't take care of our own communities. We start to look at the government to find a way out or a solution for us. Mm-hmm. The government no longer becomes serving the population, but the population serving the government's interests. And I think what educational choice does, it puts the power back in the hands of parents. Now, you know, some folks, because a lot of the ones that we deal with are means tested, which means that it's based on income, and typically it's the free reduced lunch criteria and what percentage of the free reduced lunch criteria that it meets, somewhere between 200-300% of poverty. That means you're trying to balance the scales for those that typically do not have access to quality education, because we know that if the wealthy always have access to quality education. You either move to a good neighborhood that has a good tax base, which has a good public school, or you put your kid in private school. So how do you balance the scale for parents that work two jobs and things of that nature? It's not that parents cannot choose what's best for their children, mm-hmm. are not involved, but the dynamics are different. And some folks just need community help. And I think the faith community can do that.
Let's talk about the political aspect of this just a bit, because we've got a number of politicians who will very much oppose the very kind of issues you're talking about here. Mm-hmm. But when you look at where they are educating their children, it's not in the public education system.
No. In Florida, and as you mentioned, I co-founded that program, there was no Democrat that supported that initially back 21 years ago. But yet I knew some that had their children in Christian private schools. So I'm like, look, it's kind of hypocritical that, you know, even if you say, hey, my issue isn't that they go to private school, it's just that the government's not supposed to pay for it. Well, anytime you hear government or you hear public, we are the public. There's nothing wrong with having tax credits or education savings accounts pay for these things. It's just another delivery system. Legislators know what's right privately, but they can't support it a lot of times publicly, because they would go head to head with the teachers union, who basically funds about 80% of that typical party who is against these scholarships. Mm-hmm. And the odd thing is, you know, a lot of times things are inverted, right? So those that are typically not supporting educational choice, their communities are ones that are availing themselves of the opportunities. So when you can find individuals to stand on the true merits of what they believe and not look at their political career, you'll find that they will start supporting these issues.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Reverend Michael Benjamin with us here today, and with us from the American Federation for Children, and in town. They're holding their convention, their meeting. People from across the nation are here for that. Many are familiar, of course, when we use the term public education, what that is, but we're going to talk about a number of alternative programs today, and school choice being one of them. But let's hit homeschooling for just a bit. I mean, this is a form of education that has definitely seen an uptick since COVID hit.
You know, it's very interesting. I did a lot of early work with faith leaders back in 2000, and I found that in these conversations, I asked them basically two things. I said, is there a call of God in your life to have a school in your neighborhood where kids can ride their bike or walk? And they said, yes. And then I said, can you show me financially that you have a viable plan that if we brought students that had tuition money and we took care of some of the internal things like desks and chairs and maybe some drywall to create dividers, we couldn't do bricks and mortar, but we raised money to do those other things, would you be willing to have a school? And about 50 projects rose up. And what we started to find was that they had retired principals and school teachers that were in the traditional public school system that would teach these kids. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you something as a man of color, as an African-American, as a Caribbean-American, I say the idea of teaching your own that deals with the cultures and the different things that are happening in that particular area, you find that the children, based on that type of environment, thrive. One of the biggest things that I saw as an obstacle was that the public school system was a source of upward mobility for blacks during that time, but it's not grandma's old traditional public school system delivery system anymore. And so if the outcomes are not there, you must seek other avenues to help educate your children. The problem becomes like in any monopoly. I was an economics major some 30-something years ago at University of Pennsylvania. And so I look and I say, okay, if you have a dry cleaner on one corner and it's a monopoly and an innovative small one starts on the other, you can either say, hey, how did you do that? Let me help you. Let's do it together. Or you squash them. And unfortunately, that's what's happening in the preservation of the monopoly.
The squashing of educational choices, the squashing of other...
The system does not want, it wants to keep its customer base, if you will. It does not want to allow innovative, independent things. We should be looking towards, you know, it sounds kind of hokey that we're all Americans and we should be trying to do what's best for our kids, but we know, and it's usually the leadership. It's not, you know, it's career politicians. You should be able to work yourself out of a job. You should be able to work yourself out of office just doing the right thing and then stopping.
We're going to pick up with our discussion here after the break on Crosstalk. This is coming your way from the VCY American Network. Michael Benjamin, our guest here today, and talking about education alternatives. After the break, we're going to get into some discussion on different types of school choice programs. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, creation author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, you say that there was no death before Adam sinned. But what about plants? Didn't Adam eat plants?
Yes, Chris, Adam and Eve did eat plants in the Garden of Eden. But was this really death in the biblical sense? There's a profound theological distinction between plants and animals in the Bible. Both man and the animals are described as having life, Hebrew nephesh, which plants don't have. The term life is reserved for those animals in whose nostrils is the breath of life, and also by the fact that life is in the blood. Plants have neither breath nor blood. Thus, the eating of a plant in the Garden of Eden wouldn't necessarily involve death. Plants are biologically alive, but they're not biblically alive in the sense that they do not have true life. You see, Chris, there's always an answer to the anti-creationist questions. Back to Genesis. Now that works.
Thanks, Dr. Morris.
Michael Benjamin, our guest here today on Crosstalk from the Federation for Children, and talking about education alternatives today, one of which is school choice. There are those, as we mentioned, who are choosing public education. Those are choosing homeschooling. Private education is another, and yet another is school choice that has many different forms and many different types that are at work in different ways in different states. And one of these, Michael, is what's called the voucher program. Tell us about what is the voucher program.
Well, the voucher program is nothing new, really. Pell Grant, GI Bill, we're all for it. Done great by Americans, but not in K through 12. The minute you hit 13th grade, it's a problem. It's no longer a problem outside of K through 12. You know, I've spoken with enough people over the years, and I've spoken to teachers union president that retired out of D.C. And I said, let me just ask you a question. I speculate that this is the reason why, but is it that the teachers union can't collect dues? And bingo, that was it. Because if you think about it, charter schools are on the books as public schools. So why would the traditional public school, why would the teachers union be against charter schools? It's almost against itself. Mm-hmm. Well, they can't collect dues from them either, or private schools. So then they become the enemy, so to speak. And I've seen things that would make your head spin about how legislatives have supported on the floor, I'm watching it from the gallery, and then a teacher union rep comes in, whispers in their ear and says, I've got to change my vote. And essentially it was like this. If you want to have a career in this party, this is how we vote. But the idea is that with vouchers is that it allows education dollars to follow the child, giving parents the opportunity to choose a private school of their choice and receive state-funded scholarships to pay tuition. Again, once you get to it, I say 13th grade on purpose just to provoke people to remember, what was that guy saying 13th grade? There's no 13th grade. But then they'll remember, look, vouchers aren't a problem for college. So why is it a problem through K-12? And before anyone stops and just immediately wants to oppose that position, just prayerfully contemplate why the difference. And if it's taxpayer money, why should it not follow the student to the best educational option for them?
Yeah, there are, frankly, a number of people who will choose homeschooling, or they will choose private education and say, I'm being double taxed here, so to speak. Right. I'm paying into this through my taxes. I'm also having to, pay the tuition or pay for the materials or associations that we're going to have with the homeschooling in that regard, and feel like we're paying twice for that.
In a sense, we are, because you can't get around the property taxes. So this is one of the things that makes, for example, in Florida, the Florida tax credit makes it revenue positive, is the fact that for every student that avails themselves of the scholarship, they're leaving money in a seat that's no longer occupied. So you're increasing per pupil spending for the students that remain. And that's all we ever hear, that they want to have increased funding. Well, there you go. So why would you have more money and fewer students and complain about it?
Can you give an example of some areas, states that are using the voucher program?
Well, here, the
state
voucher program, yeah, absolutely, has been one of the ones that have been very successful over the years. We're going to, in the Milwaukee program, the Racine program, and the overall state program. But I think that the growth and the opportunity is outside those initial two cities. I think that those that are outside really need to start looking at this as a viable option, especially after they've seen what COVID has done. I mean, so what COVID has done is that you have educators that are finding areas like, if they're having problems, this is a very good solution. You have some retired educators that are parents, and if they can stay home, they can educate their children. If they can't, they're using churches to then say, all right, we'll have five families. Why don't we, each one of our families, send our kids to a site where someone can watch them while they're going through the instruction? You know, because not everyone, especially for low-income parents, if both parents are working and can't take time off, can deal with this. That's what the homeschooling kind of comes in. But the voucher many times also is on special needs programs like the McKay Scholarship Program in Florida.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about some other aspects of the whole matter of choice as well. But on that voucher program, I know there is a concern on the on the part of some religious schools in particular, not wanting the government to come in and dictate what they can or cannot teach or be forbidden from teaching biblical principles within the classroom. Is there the power of the government to have that if there is such a voucher program?
No. The vouchers have been around for quite some time, and schools get to look at it this way. It's a matter of you still run the school the way you're going to run it. It's just a matter of who put the money in your pocket. Is it parent? Is it uncle? Is it auntie? Is it redirected tax liability money, which would be tax credits? Is it funds that you already paid into? And typically, you know, the funding is significantly, typically about half, maybe a little bit, sometimes a little bit more, a little bit less. But like the traditional public schools, like say, for example, last number I looked at in Florida was somewhere around $19,000 a kid. Well, if your scholarship's $9,000, you're saving the state money. The problem becomes, do you put the savings back into education? Or does it go back to the state in unencumbered funds and you fix bridges and roads and you never get to see the savings in education go back in education? Mm-hmm. So, but I will say this, you know, as believers, your churches, if you're a minister, if you're a faith leader, you better start looking at the government coming in. You might have more issues in your church than you would have with receiving any vouchers in a private school.
There's also something called Education Saving Account Programs, ESAs. Tell us about these.
The ESAs are probably the most popular of all the educational choice options right now. And essentially what they do is they give parents the power to use a child's state education dollars on approved, keyword, approved education expenses, including tuition and fees, textbooks and tutoring. So it goes a little bit outside of the traditional, 845 to 9, 245 kind of education. And as long as these things are on the list of acceptable educational expenditures, then you can use them for that. Right now, there are, I believe, 6 states currently that have ESAs. And because it has some of those additional things like, you know, tutoring and textbook and, you know, not just tuition, but tuition fees, it allows a lot more flexibility for the parents to be able to tap into those funds.
Yet another is called Scholarship Tax Credit Programs. Define that for us.
So that's what the Florida program is. And originally that one started where corporations are oversimplified. But if a corporation had $1 million tax liability before the scholarship program was on the books, that had $1 million tax liability, paid it to the state, tax liability paid in full. And when this became a program that was on the books, they were able to redirect that tax dollar to fund scholarships for lower income kids. And the state looked at it as tax liability paid in full. So, you know, you would think that this would be something to ease the tensions and the pull on and helping the traditional public school system help educate children because, you know, that overcrowded classrooms. And you think it's a good thing, right? I mean, it's not like anyone's ever going to take over all the children that will be educated in the traditional public school system, but it was a way for corporations to redirect the tax dollar, do good, and they still got, you know, berated by the teachers union for the very reasons that I explained earlier. Mm-hmm. But that's basically how it works.
So Florida is using that right now?
Yes, it's been using it since 2002 was the first scholarship given out, January 2002, and there's like 18 states that now have tax credits.
Okay. So that comes by way of a tax credit then on their annual forms or?
Well, that's a corporation or a entity. There's also a parental tax credit scholarship programs. And there's only like 2 states to do that. And those are individuals would receive that on their tax credit on their state.
So we have the ITTs, the individual tuition tax credits. Is that one and the same or is that different?
I'm not familiar with the
individual tuition tax credits?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
Then you also have like things like specific things like course choice and then you get more specific. So some of these get very pinpointed and that's the knowledge of, you know, and that's again K-12 and it's students who enroll in individual courses and options like that can receive scholarships.
Do we know what percentage nationwide would be involved in an alternative form of education that's not going directly to the public education, in the public education system that are taking part in some of these school choice aspects, the vouchers or education savings accounts or scholarship tax credits, et cetera?
There's probably others that can answer that a little better in our organization. I don't have those numbers at the top of my head, but nonetheless, it's still probably somewhere in, I would think, the less than 25%.
And your organization is presently involved in some battles on this issue. I believe in the state of Maine is one of those that filed an amicus brief here recently.
That's correct. You know, it sometimes is a situation where when you enter into something and you're trying to stand for the right, people automatically assume that you're coming against them or where they stand. And, you know, the way I originally looked at this, because, I mean, I was in the business world for 10 years before God called me out of it. And then I started with juvenile crime prevention, restructured my life. And then God said, this is what I want you to do, because I call it a Solomon prayer. I just said, man, who's going to help all these kids? And the Lord impressed upon my heart, why not you? And I was like,
you know, here am I, send my sister.
You know? right. You know, I didn't go to an Ivy League school to take off my Armani suit and my Johnson & Murphy's, but, you know, I had my Paul Arabia experience. You know, I started scrubbing toilets, mowing 2.5 acres by hand and working at 5 of the worst crime zones. So I sit there and I look at whenever I do this, I don't think of myself and what I've gone through, and it's been a lot. I think about, can we give these children a chance to grow up to find out who they can become? And to me, if I'm professional, I'm honoring you as a person, you know, whether you're a believer or not, whether you're saved or not, wherever you believe, God has already done the redemptive work for everyone. Hmm. And I don't know, I mean, we would have condemned Paul, you know, if he was present day, but he ended up writing 2/3 of the Bible. So I look in honor that if Jesus already died for these individuals, they have value no matter what they believe, and I got to treat them. I can work on the argument. I can have an opposing belief system or belief on the topic we're talking about, but I can't disrespect the person. And I really believe that if we honor that and we sit at the table and we really want what's best for children, maybe they completely believe what they believe. Maybe it's just political career stuff they're trying to protect. I don't know. Can't get into that. But if they really want to help children and we're sitting at the table and discussing, just don't get up from the table. Let's discuss any viable option to be able to help children. So I may not answer your question straightforward, but anyway, that's what I had in my heart this year.
Very good. Well, friends, we're up against a break here on Crosstalk, and we're going to open our phone lines. Our number, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. If you have a question on this whole gamut of education alternatives, school choice, which takes its many different forms, whether it be on tax credits or vouchers or other areas as well, some questions you may have, 800-733-9829. Michael Benjamin, our guest, and be ready to jot down a website after the break as well. We'll be providing that information here in just a moment here on Crosstalk.
Babylon is mentioned nearly 300 times in Scripture, from Genesis to Revelation. God's end-time program for Babylon has its roots in the historical account of the Tower of Babel. Their leader Nimrod, whose name means rebellion or revolt, led the people in defiance against God, pursuing what he saw as a new world order. In the book, Babylon, the Bookends of Prophetic History, author Dr. Andy Woods reveals it's not only the old Babylon that pursued such a path, but believes the scriptural evidence points to the new Babylon that will be rebuilt as the headquarters of the Antichrist, will serve as a political authority over the earth, and the future seat of global religious authority. He examines the scriptures that call for a futuristic, literal Babylon in God's end times program. Copies of Babylon are available for a donation of $16 when you call 1-800-729-9829.
The This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Michael Benjamin, our guest here today, and we've kind of scratched the surface, kind of gave a basic understanding of the concept of school choice that takes many different forms, different ways it's being implemented in different states. But you've got a website where listeners across the country can actually learn more about what your organization is doing.
Absolutely. www.federationforchildren.org. And there's a lot of resources there that you'll be able to avail yourselves of and see different states and what they've done and some news, and go there and just spend some time.
Federationforchildren.org is a website. One more question I'd like to ask before we take to the phone lines. And there are many parents that are actually feeling betrayed today by the school district or system. And wonder, how can we stay on top of what's taking place? And I ask that because I had just seen an article in the Epoch Times, and is a school district that had, you know, parents had come forth and they had banned, I think it was critical race theory or something like that in the mm-hmm. school. And yet there are educators who are now teaching educators how you can, and they call it how they can backdoor it, how they can bring this into the education system, or it can be any topic. It can be that which is promoting LGBT things. It can be that which is promoting abortion or giving the agenda of Planned Parenthood or something like this. And parents believe that, okay, we've got that lick, but then to come to find out teachers are backdooring things into the classroom that they have no clue is taking place. What do you say to parents in that situation?
You had better have a clue. If that's happening and you don't know, you're too far removed from the classroom. You know, you've got to have, this is a day and age where it's really never changed, but it's really exacerbated now. You've got to develop relationships on a local level. And you got to know what's going on in the local level. And, you know, people will try and backdoor things if they can get away with it, you know. We're a fallen world, mm-hmm. and people believe in absolutes less and less. Mm-hmm. So you better hold on to, it's not what you expect, it's what you inspect, right?
That's right.
So, you know, conversations with your teachers. Hey, you know, getting their cell phone and texting them or emailing them and holding them accountable of, look, hey, what are you, and your principals. You know, having conversations with your principals. I joined things I don't really have time for, I didn't want to do. You know, I joined the school advisory council. You know, you bring certain things up. Hey, you know, we need to have a chess club. Okay, Mr. Benjamin, you find me a chess club. Here's the chess club, sign them up, there they go. Mm-hmm. Next thing is, hey, what are we doing about this critical race theory? What's going on? You know, are we teaching history the way it is and whatever way it really happened is the way it happened? Or are you trying to take things out just to, you know, satisfy, you know, wealthy people or political position or so on and so forth? It's not why I have my kid here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, if we have problems with products, you know, corporations that are involved in supporting Planned Parenthood and abortions, but yet, you know, they're putting aborted pieces of babies and foods you consume, stop consuming the food. and you know, write the corporation or, you know, and we shouldn't do this in silos. We should get other like-minded individuals to band together, because there's other intelligence and genius and gifts and talents that if we can come together, we can get a lot more done, mm-hmm. and even in time constraints.
Well, folks, again, the website federationforchildren.org. We're going to the website here for giving the website out so you can check it out, look at those alternatives, and we're going to pick up some calls here. Let's begin with Cheryl calling from the home city of Milwaukee, and you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm calling. My daughter-in-law speaks on across the country now, for she's a teacher in MPS here in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. There's 9 states and more that are joining in legislature to remove Black history from school books. Down south, those 9 states have already achieved that, and we're trying to fight for children to have equal learning. Can you speak on that, where these books are only teaching white history, and that I really, 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 when I turned you on today, I'm so proud to say that I can hear someone that is finally going to speak on what's really going on. And MPS is going backwards here in Milwaukee. They don't care about children learning at all.
Thank
they
you.
Have no race embrace kindness. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl, and we'll have our guest comment.
Well, I hear your heart. You know, again, you know, one of the challenges when we have things like this is people shake their heads and say it's a horrible thing, but they don't get together and do it. You know, I liken it to if you're in a cage match and you're in a fight and you can't get out, you can't get in a fetal position and cover up. You got to fight, no matter what your skill level. Now, if you're not quite in the octagon yet, you might want to start building that skill and building that army or that cohesive unit that is like-minded to get together, because there's power in unity. And if you're number one, you find like-minded people, you do your research, you learn how to become an advocate, and as spirited as you can be about anything, you know, maintain your decorum, know how the people that you're interfacing will look to discount you, have the content, and just nail it. You know, you obviously know of what some nine states are doing. Find out how they did it. Find out who the perpetrators are of it here in the great state of Wisconsin, and start to develop a strategic and tactical approach on how to deal with this. But you have to have your targets first. You got to know who the perpetrators are. So that would be the first steps that I would say.
Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Judy's calling from Ohio. You're on the air, Judy.
Yes. Thank you for taking the call. Here, I was listening at the very beginning, and I missed the statistics that he gave out about the third grade level of reading and ending up in prison. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to share with you that here a couple months ago, my husband and I, who are grandparents and have no children in school or grandchildren and have celebrated 60 years of marriage and are in our 80s, we got a message that there was going to be such a thing as a, quote, community meeting. And so we went, and when we did go, there were like only about 8 to 10 people there. Now there are over 55 going on 60 people there. Mm-hmm. And these are concerned citizens about every aspect, whether it's health or education or some other things too. Anyway, we have no formal name or la la la, but I'll tell you, the leader did inspire everybody to go to school board meetings. And now we even have one that's running for a school board mm-hmm. in our county. And we are attending every school board meeting in these counties.
You know, that's something that's, Judy, I'm going to just interrupt for a moment there, forgive me, but this mentioning of school boards, there are so many times, mm-hmm. Michael, that, and I'm having comment, we'll come back to you here, but many times people said, oh, an election for school board, that really doesn't matter. I'm going to sit this one out.
Right.
And Judy, I appreciate what you're saying about how you're getting engaged mm-hmm. and going to these school board meetings mm-hmm. To know what is going on, where you can effect change to see, you know, what member is standing for what. Michael, these are critical things that she's talking about here.
And it's not just those people who have kids in school that,
right.
or grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we don't have any. But the other thing is, this gal that got this group going, she has 5 different counties going in our state. She is quite an organizer. You might want to get hold of her. And the other thing was, when I started going to these school board meetings, I asked the people, what about Constitution? Where is the Constitution taught?
Mm-hmm.
And how much do they know about it?
And
some of the board members say, I don't know. I didn't even learn much about the Constitution. Let's face it.
There's a problem. Yeah, we've abandoned civics education in so many places. Judy, thank you for the call. I'm going to have Michael comment here.
So a couple things. Let me go backwards. The Constitution. Well, there's a reason why they don't want to teach the Constitution anymore, because that's the basis on which we're supposed to run our country. And they're trying to change the Constitution to have a substitute Constitution. It's almost like people trying to come up with new Bibles now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you believe this, we'll come up with that belief Bible. If you believe mm-hmm. in this, then we'll come up with that. So people are dealing with, no longer dealing with objective truths. So anyway, that's the touch on that. If you're not on reading level by the third grade, they're building prison cell for you. That's the statistic that I gave you earlier. I've heard some that...
And I think you were mentioning the graduation rates.
Right. Of African-American males.
Yes.
Right. At 59%.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there's PhDs, there's doctors, there's lawyers, there's leaders. So are you saying that, you know, African-American males can't learn, or is there something set up that potentially is either not sensitive to the way folks... Here's an example. I remember one time, probably about 17 years ago, I walked into a school that was serving special needs students, and there was a student that the teacher was bragging on, and I guess she thought that it was a soft pitch to say, hey, you know, share with them how, you know, you did on this thing, and they didn't do well. And that surprised her. So it was a written test. But this student learned differently. So she took the test on the spot, told the student to stand up. She stood behind her desk and read every last question. He got none wrong.
Hmm. Hmm.
Now, that's a teacher who's sensitive to how someone learns.
Yeah.
If you don't have that sensitivity, then you may not get the most out of your students. And then there was one other question.
We talked about the school boards as well.
All right. So I initially was talking about getting involved in the local level, and it does really matter. And it matters even more now because as you're seeing some less than positive views and responses to our national leadership in Washington, D.C., you have governors that are able to do what they need to do in their states. So you can start looking at even within your county as to what that school board is doing and what they're trying to get. And this even goes back to the other caller's question about, you know, not teaching African-American history. Well, you know, these school board meetings have to have notice within 7 days. They have to put out information about 7 days prior to having the meeting and, you know, show up, you know, be that parent. I will say one other thing. This last caller mentioned that she was 80. I mean, I have a grandson. But the perspective from grandparents and the time that they typically have and their interaction with their grandchildren, if they know that this is going on now and they know what their grandchildren are headed towards in terms of an education delivery system, and they have a little bit more time and they want to be able to use their life learning and acumen and such to get involved, they are a very powerful group that can enter into the local level of keeping these individuals accountable. And they also remember the regime prior to all these things coming into the traditional public school system backdoor, and they can give a frame of reference of how things were done and what people are trying to do now.
Julie, we appreciate the call. We've got others lined up behind you. Plus, we've got a break upon us here. But thank you so much for interacting today. We'll be back in just 1 minute and picking up. Jason, hang on the line. You'll be next. Educational Alternatives Today, Michael Benjamin, our guest. Website, federationforchildren.org. Back in just a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Since the November 2020 election, many Americans have been told there's nothing to the voter fraud claims. Reality is, the evidence now is stacking up. I can give a couple examples. One, a recent report by Mesa County, Colorado clerk Tina Peters documents voter fraud, and it documents voter fraud cover-up. She, in her report, shows all the missing files from their county computers after something known as trusted build was put in. She reports with her IT guy, who has worked at the national security level, that the trusted build update deleted many, many of the 2020 voting records that are to be saved for up to 22 months. Now we have the Maricopa County report that came out on Friday. Many believe it showed that Donald Trump lost and Biden won. Reality is, some say he even won by more votes, Biden. Well, that's because they found more fraudulent votes. The American people need to wake up to voter fraud. I'm Brandon House.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and our guest today is Michael Benjamin. Again, the website, federationforchildren.org. And hitting this option of educational choices that are out there, certainly private education, homeschooling, and then there's a variety of school choice programs, some that are voucher, education savings account programs, a scholarship tax credit, also the individual tuition tax credits, and taking your calls today. And Jason, thank you for your patience. Dodgeville, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick statement to make. Can I just say school choice? Because if your government school is good enough, they'll choose it. And as we can see, I believe that the homeschooling has doubled in the last year, and that really says a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that. And there's a lot of people who are just saying, you know, we can't handle this system that's been so status quo here. We're going to make a change. And really, parents need to be in the driver's seat here.
Absolutely. If children were not receiving a year's worth of education in a year's time prior to the pandemic, what do you think they're getting now?
Mm.
And then when parents are able to instruct their own children, at least for, like, even if they were able to work out another solution at the end of last year, everybody, the last quarter, everybody had their children, and they were able to find out, you know, if it was babysitting or they were really learning things, were they being pushed, and then also the material that they were being taught. And it really sobered up a lot of people, and some who were able to started creating schools, pods. As I mentioned earlier, if they couldn't do it in their school or maybe in their neighborhood, there's one parent that was home and the other neighborhood kids bring their kids over, so at least they can be supervised and they don't turn on Netflix or something else, mm-hmm. hopefully PureFlix, but something other than their schoolwork. So, yes.
Phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Venice, Florida, and Colleen is calling. Hi, Colleen, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to reiterate what another caller said about going to school board meetings. Homeschooling is wonderful. We did that, and I loved it. It's not for everybody. In our city here, I'm 70 now, so I don't have any kids in school. I was invited to go to a school board meeting and thought, well, that's, you know, not appropriate for me. But it is. A small group of moms, and we got some other moms together. We went to some school board meetings and found that we were really able to input some valuable information that they listened to. And it was such a productive meeting. It was just such a good thing to go. I felt foolish that I ever thought that I shouldn't go, because if the older generation doesn't start fighting for the younger generation, well, they're in trouble now, but we just have to do what we can do, and God is raising up little armies of people across the country, because we can't depend on politicians.
That's
we,
right.
The politicians have gotten us here.
Thank you, Colleen, for the call. Michael?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you were so candid that you said that at first you didn't think it was a good use of your time. And then you had a paradigm shift and said, you know what, we can have value here.
Mm-hmm.
After having those meetings, you really should have a scribe, or if you can't videotape it, which is probably, they probably wouldn't allow it, but to say, you know, what actually happened in that meeting, so that you can hold the people accountable, because, you know, you have folks that'll say yes, but they don't come through and do what they're supposed to do. And a short pencil is better than a long memory. So, you know, get these things written down. But, you know, kudos to you to go into these meetings. Again, if you can grow that meeting, the group of grandparents to go out to these meetings. And, you know, it's always good to kind of reinvent yourself. You know, when the children leave the nest, sometimes we lose our identity. And we have to remember what our dreams were and different things that we can learn to keep ourselves active. And, hey, start researching and holding these people accountable.
Thank you, Colleen, for the call here today.
Powerful thing. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Edward in Franklin, Wisconsin. Edward, you're on the air.
Hi, Jim.
Hi there.
This is Deb. Hi. I just want to bring up two points. One is, I think it's Wisconsin Statute 360. I forget what section it is, and that the schools should be teaching facts. When I call her to talk about that, and then in terms of quality, I'm a quality engineer, and people have to understand that schools are now have a ISO 9000 certification, and part of an ISO certification is that you can have a car or a corrective action, and parents and all that have the legal right by certification that they can actually issue a car or a complaint to the school. That's open to them. That's an option that's available.
Great. Thank you for the call here, Edward. Appreciate that. And he brings up an interesting point about, quality control. You know, if something comes through your assembly line, doesn't meet the quality standards here, we have to do something. We have to make adjustments here. And when we look at what's on the conveyor belts coming through our schools here today, we've got to have that same attitude.
Yeah, well, the delivery system, the car today with the technology is the Tesla, right? Mm-hmm. The car today when the education system was developed the way it is was the Model T.
Yeah, think about it. Let's pick up, we'll have time, one last call. Marcy in Duluth, Minnesota, you're on the air.
Hi, Vic. I monitored the 709 school district in Duluth, Minnesota for 10 and a quarter years with a video camera. And they have no right to tell you you can't come in with a video camera. If you have a public access channel TV in your area, go get trained by them like I did on their camera, and their camera goes with you to those meetings you recorded, bring it back to the station. And if these are cable channels, of course, but then create your own YouTube channel and drive people to it and let them know what's going on in their school district.
Thank you, Marcy. 30 seconds we've got left. What would you like to leave with our listeners, Michael?
30 seconds, huh? Okay, so a familiar story, Luke 10, the Good Samaritan. Let's look at this a little differently. We look at someone that was injured, beaten up, and taken into the inn and cared for, but nothing was ever done about the robbers. Nothing was done to get them off the road, which meant that anybody else that passed by, they can beat up and rob. And if we start looking at the beat up and robbed as our children, they will go to school and those students, we need to be proactive to not only provide safe havens for them, but to also stand up against those robbers who are trying to leave them for dead on the side of the road.
Michael, thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you, Jim.
Michael Benjamin, our guest here today on Crosstalk. Thanks for listening here on the VCY American Network.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.